Ando and I had been quiet most of the trip. We slept on the plane and barely talked on the two-hour drive from Jacksonville into Waycross. Although I was still pissed about not being sent to Jamaica, I knew he was even more upset. Daddy had tasked us with heading to his hometown in search of information regarding the whereabouts of Uncle Larry, Kenny, and Curtis. Neither Orlando nor I was enthused about the assignment, but we did what we had to do. "Yeah, this is where it all started," he sighed as we passed the Piggly Wiggly. "I can see why they got the hell away from here. This place is a dump."
"Yeah, but believe it or not, they were doing pretty good for themselves while they lived here. Dad had the gas station, and Uncle Lou and Uncle Larry had their side hustles, of course."
"Of course," I laughed, knowing he was referring to the gambling, numbers running, loan sharking, and in Uncle Lou's case, pimping.
"Gotta love the Duncans," he said with a chuckle.
"So, how do we even know where to start looking?" I asked, feeling irritated. It had been a long day, and I was tired. The last place I wanted to be was on a wild goose chase in the middle of nowhere. "How far is the nearest hotel? It's too late to do anything else tonight. I mean, we are in Waycross."
"Nah, it's early for where we're headed."
"What? Where is that?"
"We're going to another Duncan family establishment here in Waycross."
He was smiling, but I groaned. "Ugh, are we going to the gas station?"
"Nope. Something way better than the gas station."
I was not in the mood to play 20 questions with him, so I just shut up, leaned my head back, and closed my eyes. We continued traveling in silence until finally we arrived at the infamous Oak Street, where Orlando parked in front of a large house with a wraparound porch. There was a neon sign above the porch that read, "Big Shirley's."
"Oh shit, Big Shirley's still exists?"
I laughed, remembering the stories about the brothel named after my aunt. It was the place where my parents had met.
"Is this still a whorehouse?"
"It's more like a strip club now," Orlando said.
"Get the fuck out of here. You know I love strip clubs."
"So do I, little sister. So do I."
Suddenly, I was feeling more energetic. We walked up to the front door, where we were searched by a burly guy who looked more like an oversized door holder than a security guard. He was so overweight, he was winded just from waving a security wand over our bodies.
"You got any ID?"
he asked breathily as he stared at my breasts instead of my face.
"You ain't ask him for ID," I said, pointing at Orlando, who had just gone through the door with no problem.
"I wasn't interested in his name, sexy."
He grinned at me, and I was immediately repulsed. Reaching into my pocket, I pulled out one of my many fake IDs I kept for work purposes. He looked at the ID I handed him.
"Sky, that name suits you."
"Can I go in now?" I asked.
"By all means."
He held the door open and I walked inside. I didn't know how it compared to other strip clubs in the Deep South, but it definitely wasn't like any of the clubs I'd ever been to. First, there wasn't a stage, just some strobe lights and a random pole with a chick swinging on it in the corner of the room. There were a few tables with ladies dancing on top, and of course, a couple of other naked women walking around. Trap music blared from some speakers, but I didn't even see a DJ at first, because he was blocked by the crowd of folks near the pole. Although I wasn't impressed by the place, clearly the crowd of male patrons was, including my brother, who was staring at some red bone with the biggest nipples I had ever seen.
"Damn,"
he muttered, practically drooling on himself.
"Stay focused, Orlando," I nudged him.
"I'm trying, but she got my full attention right now," he said.
I tugged his arm and pulled him over to the bar.
"Let me get a pomegranate martini," I told the bartender, who stared at me blankly for a few seconds.
Finally, he said,
"We fresh out of those."
Orlando leaned over and whispered,
"Paris, I know we're in a bar, but we're in Waycross."
I rolled my eyes and said,
"Fine. Let me get a vodka and cranberry. Can you handle that?"
"Now that I can handle."
He commenced to making my drink, along with the shot of Hennessy Orlando ordered.
"Well, hello. I haven't seen you before."
The nippled woman who caught Orlando's eye walked over and greeted him.
"Yeah, it's my first time here," he said.
"Well, welcome to Big Shirley's. What brings you in here?"
She eased her body so close to him that her breasts were now pressed against his chest.
Actually, I'm here for two reasons,
he told her. I could see him trying not to stare.
And what's that?
She gave him a seductive look.
Well, one, to buy me a drink and enjoy the atmosphere.
I can see you're already doing that. Is there anything else you might be interested in buying?
She asked, moving her torso slightly so she was basically caressing him with her breasts.
Not right now, I told her.
She shot me a dirty look but quickly turned her attention back to her mark. No doubt she saw dollar signs, judging by the way she was sizing up Orlando's gold watch.
And I'm looking for someone,
Orlando told her.
You've already found her. I'm Lydia.
She introduced herself by touching his leg, and I could see Orlando struggling even more. I had to give it to her. This chick was good. Real good.
Well, we're actually looking for Curtis and Kenny, I said, deciding to take control of the conversation since my brother was so distracted.
Who?
The bartender asked as he placed the drinks on the bar. Curtis and Kenny Duncan, the owners of this place, I told him.
Oh, nah, we haven't seen them in a minute, he answered.
Lydia looked over to the bartender with a frown.
What are you talking about? They were just here this afternoon.
Shut the fuck up, he growled at her. Orlando and I exchanged glances.
Why don't we go somewhere that we can chat in private?
Orlando said, picking up his drink and taking Lydia by the hand.
Y'all give private dances?
We give way more than that, she answered happily. Right this way.
I watched as Lydia led him through the crowd. I guess this place was still a whorehouse after all. Knowing they would probably be gone for a while, I decided to sit on one of the worn bar stools rather than stand. A couple of men tried to catch my eye, but I made sure to avoid contact, and instead turned my attention back to the man behind the bar.
Can I get another?
I said, pushing my empty glass toward him and making sure I gave him a smile as seductive as the one Lydia had given Orlando. He gave me a double take, then shrugged.
No problem.
When he came back a few minutes later, I made sure my cleavage was a little more apparent by pulling my shirt down further and leaning against the bar.
Thanks. I'm Sky, I told him.
Nice to meet you,
he said, glancing at my chest, then back up at me.
I'm Barry.
Well, Barry, listen. I need to find Curtis and Kenny. It's really important.
Barry shook his head.
Look, I don't want no trouble. I can't help you with that.
It's not like that. We're not causing any trouble. Really, we're not. The truth is, they're my cousins.
Barry folded his arms. Yeah, right.
No, seriously, they are. I can prove it. Big Shirley was my aunt, too.
Anybody would know Shirley and the boys were family, he said.
Would anybody have this?
I whipped out my real ID and flashed it to him.
Barry looked at it and then looked at me.
Well, I'll be damned, he said.
I told you. They really are my cousins, and I need to find them. It's a family emergency.
The way he looked around to make sure no one was listening, I thought he was about to give me some valuable information. But then he spoke, and all he said was,
Sorry, miss. Kenny and Kurt aren't here.
When are they coming back? I asked him, pressing for more.
I honestly don't know. They haven't been around much ever since their dad came back around a little while ago. They only pop in to pick up the cash, and that's it, he shrugged.
Do you know where I might be able to find them?
Can't really say. They live out on their family farm. I'm sure you know exactly where that is, if you're really a Duncan, as you claim.
Yeah, I do, I replied, or at least Orlando knew.
Thanks.
My phone rang, so I stepped away from the bar to answer it.
What's up, Vegas?
Where are you guys?
We're in Waycross.
I just got a line on Kenny and Curtis. If they're here, Uncle Larry can't be too far behind.
Good. Find those motherfuckers before they cause any more trouble,
he said.
More trouble? What the fuck happened?
I could hear Vegas take a breath and pause, which was never a good sign.
Those motherfuckers blew up our Atlanta hub and killed Frankie B.
They killed Uncle Frankie? Shit, O's not gonna like that. We might be bringing these dudes home in body bags.
That's for Pop to worry about. Personally, I don't care how you bring their asses back. Just don't take any chances. Family or not, these are some dangerous people. Understand?
Larry, 21.
Well, man, this is it.
Jamaica John waved his arm dramatically, as if he were revealing the grand prize on a game show instead of a tiny-ass cargo plane that was only slightly larger than his oversized body. I stood back and stared for a second, hesitating for several reasons, the first being that I hated to fly. Always had. Something about being suspended up in the air, knowing we could fall at any moment, made me fearful. I enjoyed being on the ground, where I was in control. The second reason for my hesitation was that not only was the plane little as hell, but it didn't look safe at all. It was pretty banged up and rusted. When Jamaica John told me he had a friend who could get us to our destination without passports, I knew it wasn't going to be a damn Learjet, but I damn sure wasn't expecting a piece of shit like the one we were standing in front of. I glanced over at the pilot, who looked barely old enough to possess a driver's license, let alone a pilot's. "You sure this thing is going to make it to Kingston?" I asked.
"Of course, man," Jamaica John said. "It made it from Kingston with no problem. Gus here flies back and forth all the time. Right, Gus?"
The lanky guy dressed in cutoff jeans and a colorful tank top shrugged. His lackadaisical attitude definitely wasn't helping me gain any confidence in his ability to fly or in the damn plane itself.
"Never had no problem at all. Don't see having none now. But it's getting late, and I need to be taken off. You say you need to get to Jamaica? I'm going. You pay, you go. Your choice, man."
He sauntered off, opened the door of the winged vehicle, and began placing a couple of boxes and bags inside.
"Hey, you say you need to speak with Vinny? This is the only way to get you there with no passport or red tape," Jamaica John said.
I turned and looked at Mama, who was waiting for me to make a decision.
"What's the fucking problem?" Mama hissed. "Pay the man and let's get on the fucking plane. We got shit to handle."
"1,000 apiece, right?" I asked Jamaica John. He nodded.
"That's right. A bargain, I'd say."
I slid my hand in my pocket, counted out $2,000, and handed it to him. He counted the stack, counted it again, then glanced up at me with a weird look on his face.
"Is there a problem?" I asked him.
He stared at me for another second, like he was trying to read something on my face. Then he smirked and said,
"No. No problem at all, man."
"Good. Then let's get the hell out of here and get this shit over with. The faster we take off, the faster we can land," I said. I walked over to the open door where Gus stood, smoking what I hoped was a cigarette. I paused to let my mother go inside first, then I followed behind her. The inside of the plane was even smaller than I expected, with a pilot seat, two small seats, and an open space for whatever other cargo Gus happened to be delivering. I strapped myself into the seat next to Mama, and a few minutes later, Gus climbed inside. As he began fidgeting with the dials and controls, I prayed that this wasn't truly the death trap I felt it was. The engine started up with a stutter, and I half expected it to cut off.
Jesus Christ,
what had I gotten myself into? Gus fiddled with a few more knobs, and then, thankfully, it began purring like a loud kitten. He then reached down to the floor beside him and turned on what I assumed was a radio, because reggae music began playing. Gus gave a thumbs up. The plane jolted a bit, and then we reversed. I peered out the window and saw Jamaica John waving at us. When the plane changed direction and we began moving forward at a faster pace, I braced myself for takeoff. The plane rocked and rattled, causing all of us to shift back and forth. I closed my eyes and held on to the side of the raggedy seat, and then the plane stopped shaking so much, and I knew we were in the air. I released my grip on the seat, but my heart still raced, and I didn't open my eyes.
"I can't believe we're going to Jamaica," I heard Mama say. "I ain't never been over there. I'ma get me a drink with an umbrella and lay out on the beach. Hell, who knows? I might meet me a man over there, a nice Jamaican man with muscles who can help me get my groove back. Shit, Larry, who knows? You might end up with a Jamaican stepdaddy. She laughed. Mama, please, I mumbled, my eyes still closed. I was trying my best to hold it together, but her nonstop chatter wasn't helping me any, especially with the constant thumping of the music Gus was playing. It was all too much. Being in the small compartment of the plane, which was bumping up and down in the air, was causing me to feel more and more constricted. I could hardly breathe. What the hell is wrong with you? She hissed. Why are you acting like a scared rabbit? It's just a plane, Larry. You act like your ass ain't fly when you were in the war. The plane jumped a little, and I gripped the chair even tighter. Mama, I pleaded, can you just stop talking for a little while, please? Boy, you look white as a ghost, she said, laughing at me. Mama, please, will you just sit back and shut up till we get where we're going? I said, reaching in my suit jacket for my silver flask. I unscrewed the cap, taking a long swig without even knowing what was inside. The smooth liquor burned as it went down my throat, but it made me feel a hell of a lot better. Gus, who must have heard what was going on, suddenly changed the music to something a little more soothing. I sat back and started to enjoy the soft ballad that was now playing. I took another longer swig from the flask.
Feel better?
Mama asked. Yeah, I said.
Good. Now give me some of that so I can feel better too,
she said, and I passed her the flask. I closed my eyes again, and this time I drifted into a deep slumber, knowing that when I woke up, we would be on the ground.
Curtis, 22.
Hold the damn light closer this way, I yelled at my brother. I am! Damn! Kenny said, shining the light from his cell phone in the direction I was pointing. Are you sure there's even anything down here? This could be another one of his fantasies, Kurt. I ignored him and kept digging in the dirt. I was on my hands and knees behind the barn of our family home, in the exact spot my father had instructed us to go. Although I had wondered the same thing a few seconds before Kenny asked the question, there was no way I was going to stop looking. People called my dad Crazy Larry all the time, and although he was a little quirky, I always felt that he had got a bad rap most of the time. So when he called with specific instructions to get a package that he had buried behind the barn of the Duncan farm, even I was a little skeptical. But I was going to keep shoveling in that dirt until I found it, or China.
Hey, you hear something? Kenny whispered and moved the light again.
Damn it, Kenny! I said, my frustration increasing. Of course I hear something. We're on a fucking farm with noisy-ass hogs, chickens, and cows. Now hold the damn light over here. I don't care what you say. I'm telling you I heard something, he whispered. Shit, I think I found something. I squinted, and I leaned closer to the ground. Give me that damn phone.
Kenny passed me the phone, and I held it into the shallow hole that I had dug. Sure enough, I saw something that looked like fabric. Well, I be damned, I said.
I handed him the phone and used the hand shovel to dig around the area a little more. Then I reached my hand in and tried to pull out whatever it was. It didn't budge. A part of me was afraid that it might be a fucking corpse.
What is it?
If you hold the fucking light still, I'll be able to see and tell you, I shot back. He finally held the light still long enough for me to see that it was a duffel bag. I continued digging and pulling it until it was finally free.
What's in it? Kenny asked.
Money, I said when I unzipped the bag and saw rows of bills held with rubber bands and stacked together in clear plastic bags. The duffel was full of money. Must be over $1 million in here.
Damn! You think this was here the entire time he was away?
Kenny asked. I shrugged, zipping the bag and standing up. Knowing the old man, there ain't no telling. He might have bags of money all over the country, but this is the only one he sent us to get, and it's the only one I'm digging for. Come on, help me put the dirt back in this hole so we can get the hell out of here. Kenny hesitated, then froze up like a scared doe caught in headlights.
I'm telling you, Kurt, I hear something, he said.
Man, if you don't bring your paranoid ass on and help me fill this fucking hole so we can get the fuck out of here, I swear. I stopped mid-sentence when I heard a branch snap.
You heard it too this time, didn't you? Kenny asked.
Cut that fucking light off.
I said, dropping the shovel and pulling the gun from my waistband. Kenny turned the light off and wasted no time taking out his own weapon. Yo, I don't know who the fuck you are, but this is private property and you trespassing, so prepare to die, I said, aiming my gun in the direction of the sound. I could say the same thing to you, Curtis, someone replied. He stepped into the moonlight and I could make out that silhouette of a gun. I was about to shoot when I realized that I knew the person. Orlando? Kenny recognized him too. You were expecting maybe Wonder Woman? He joked. Orlando had always been a little corny like that, brainiac that he was, but just because he was super smart didn't mean he was any less dangerous than the rest of my cousins. After all, they were raised by my snake of an uncle. What are you doing here? Kenny asked, but he sounded a little shaky. I should be asking you that. He glanced at the hole in the duffel bag. We live here, and what we do is none of your damn business. I raised my gun, pointing it at him. Kenny did the same. Now, what are you doing here? I'm here to talk, cousin, Orlando said. Where's Uncle Larry? Kenny glanced over at me, and I shook my head. Again, that's none of your business. First of all, lower your gun, he said forcefully. Secondly, that's where you're wrong. You and Uncle Larry made this my business when you blew up our transport hub and killed my godfather. Godfather? Kenny repeated. That's right. Frankie B was my godfather and one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. He stared at us arrogantly as if he had no doubt he was in control. Now put down your guns. We gonna have a little talk about your father. I ain't putting shit down! You put your fucking gun down! Kenny shouted erratically. I'd always known LC had raised his kids to think they were better than us, but Orlando was a little too sure of himself for a man who had two guns on him. I tried my best to look around without taking my eyes off him, but I didn't see anyone or anything. Who else is here? I know LC didn't just send you after us alone.
He didn't.
He sent me along with him, a female voice said from behind me. I glanced to my right, and there was my baby cousin, Paris, holding guns to the back of Kenny's and my head. Bitch had to be some kind of ninja, because I had no idea how she had sneaked up on us like that.
Now I'm not playing with you, Curtis. You either, Kenny. Put the fucking guns down.
Ain't nobody playing with you either, Kenny told her.
Paris glared over at my brother, who still had his gun aimed. I was surprised by her confidence and cockiness.
Orlando, we ain't got time for this shit. Larry's crazy ass could show up at any minute, she said.
I know, Paris, but they're our family. I don't want to kill them if we don't have to.
Orlando sounded as if he was more concerned about her pulling the trigger than us. Now, fellas, just put the guns down and tell us where to find Uncle Larry.
Not gonna happen, Orlando. I spat at him. I wasn't about to fall for their good cop, bad cop routine. The four of us stood, guns drawn in the darkness with only the moon lighting our faces. The tension was so thick that you could hear the beating of all four hearts simultaneously. We were all ready to kill as we watched and waited with anticipation to see who would pull the trigger first.
All of you, put the damn guns down!
Our bodies remained still, but we all glanced over to see my mother running toward us, carrying a big-ass shotgun.
Did you hear me? I said put the guns down!
Mama kept yelling, but none of us listened. Our Mexican standoff continued until she stepped in between Kenny and me, looking directly in my eyes.
Mama, what the hell?
Every time I moved my gun, she moved with it.
Put the gun down, Curtis! Put it down now, she demanded.
Mama, this ain't got nothing to do with you, I told her.
And this mess between Larry and LC ain't got nothing to do with y'all, she said.
He put Daddy in a mental hospital, Mama, I said, beginning to get choked up.
I know, and he might do it again. But that's between the two of them, not you kids.
No one moved. No one lowered a gun, and Mama started crying.
Curtis, you and Kenny are my sons.
She looked at me and my brother, then turned to Paris and Orlando.
And you are my niece and nephew. You can't do this to one another. I won't allow it.
My heart ached as she sobbed, but I refused to lower my gun.
Y'all are family, my mother cried.
Orlando took a step closer, lowering his gun. Look, Curtis and Kenny, we're not here to hurt anybody. We're here to help. How the fuck are you gonna help us? I asked, feeling a little pissed off that he'd been the one to react to my mother's tears and lower his weapon. The bastard had made me look like a bad son. We're here to help with your father. Your dad needs help, Curtis. He has some serious mental issues.
Says who? You? Your old man? You're a piece of fucking work, Orlando. You think you can come down here to our home and talk shit about our father being ill when neither you or your old man came to visit him in that hellhole once? I shouted. Fuck you! We don't need that kind of help. He's not gonna listen to you, Orlando. Curtis is just as crazy as his Uncle Larry, Paris interjected. My brother's not crazy, Kenny snapped. And neither is our dad, I added. Curtis! Kenny! Orlando! Paris! Please! My mother pleaded. Mama, go inside, Kenny told her. I looked over at my brother, who had always been a mama's boy.
Aunt Nene, for once, can you listen to your dumbass son and do what he says? You really don't want to be here when your son dies, Paris sneered.
I don't know what those words did to my mother, but suddenly she charged at Paris like a wild animal, pointing the shotgun directly at her chest. Paris instinctively pointed her guns at Mama.
You want to kill someone, then kill me, Mama shouted.
Paris, no, Orlando yelled.
Then tell her to stop pointing that thing at me. You know how I am, Orlando,
Paris responded. No, you put yours down. This is getting out of hand. Orlando walked over and guided his sister's hand to her side. She's our aunt. She is not going to hurt you. But to his surprise and mine, Mama cocked both hammers of the shotgun and said, I'm sorry, Orlando, but I can't let you hurt my boys. Y'all drop those guns. Aunt Nene, Orlando sounded so disappointed, but he dropped his gun in the dirt. Paris took a little more coaxing, so Kenny and I raised our guns too.
I'm sorry, baby, but I'm not doing anything that your mother wouldn't do, Mama said to Orlando.
Then she spoke to me. Curtis, you and Kenny get in that car and don't come back, you hear? Yes, ma'am, we said in unison. Kenny went over and kissed her on the cheek, and then I did the same. Orlando and Paris looked sick to their stomachs as I picked up the duffel bag and slowly backed away, heading to the car.
Ruby, 23. The house was quiet. Vincent had eaten, bathed, and gone to bed hours ago, but I tossed and turned in bed, flipping channels on the television as I waited for Vinny to come upstairs. When I got tired of waiting, I got up and pulled on a robe and slipped into a pair of slippers before I quietly eased down the stairs. The house we were staying in was so much smaller than our house in Negril. That house was open and spacious, with natural lighting that brightened every corner when the sun was shining. Here, it was old and cramped. And it didn't matter if it was day or night. It always seemed dark and depressing. I walked downstairs through the small living area into the bedroom that Vinny used as an office. The door was slightly opened. I peered inside and saw that he was alone, staring at the computer.
Whatcha doin'? I asked as I entered the room.
Vinny, startled by my voice, jumped in his seat.
What's wrong with you sneaking in here like that, Ruby?
I wasn't sneaking. Why you so jumpy? You in here looking at porn or something?
I folded my arms and walked closer so I could see what was on the screen.
Why would I need porn when I have you? He said seductively. What is that, Vinny?
I said, looking closer at the image on the computer. It looked like a live video of some sort.
Is that the house in Negril?
Yes. Vinny turned back around in his chair. That's our house.
Why you looking at it?
I'm waiting on something, and it's frustrating as hell.
Waiting for what? I was confused.
Waiting on the Duncans to show up.
The Duncans are at our house in the grill? Where?
I leaned in, watching the video closer. The screen flickered, and another view of our house appeared. This time of the back door. I didn't see anyone or anything resembling a Duncan, though.
They're not there yet, but they're coming. I know they're coming, and when they get there, there is gonna be a big surprise.
What kind of surprise? You're sounding like a crazy man, Vinny. What is going on?
I turned his chair so he was facing me.
The entire house is wired to blow the fuck up. All I gotta do is push a button, and the whole place goes up like the 4th of July. He gave me a sinister grin. Vinny, I don't understand. Why would you blow up our house? I love that. His phone rang and he hit the speaker button. John, what's the good word?
He's on the way, boss.
So, he went through with it? Frankie B is dead?
Not only is he dead, the man blew up the entire Duncan transportation hub and half the damn block. He crazy.
Get the fuck out of here. Vinny suddenly had a huge smile on his face. You couldn't have paid me to think that he would go through with it. My God, this is fantastic. John, I owe you, man. This won't be forgotten.
Thank you, boss.
Vinny hung up the phone and reached for me. He pulled me into his lap and kissed me. What was that? I stared at him.
That was the best damn news I've gotten all week, baby. You're not gonna believe this.
What?
Well, it seems that the Duncans may not be a problem for us after all, and that dope I've been sitting on the past 6 months may have a buyer.
What? How?
The Duncans have a bigger, more important enemy to deal with than Mr. Vinny Dash. Someone who is itching to come directly after them.
I don't understand what you're talking about. I had an uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach, and I didn't like it one bit. Someone blew up their entire transportation warehouse to smithereens. He laughed. It's one of the most important pieces of their business. Without it, they can't move product. The motherfuckers are crippled. I gasped.
Someone like who? Did you do this? Because they will come after us for it.
Well, not exactly, but kinda. He couldn't stop laughing. Anyone who would do something like that directly would have a really big problem with the Duncans, and they would stop at nothing to exact revenge.
Vinny, you're confusing the hell out of me. I just heard you thank John for doing it. That's the beauty of this entire thing, honey. It's entirely confusing.
Yeah, sure. I put the wheels in motion, but I didn't push the button. It was one of their own. Elsie's brother Larry did it for us. We're teaming up to put the Duncans out of business, and they don't even know I'm involved. He's on his way here now.
What you mean he's on his way here? Have you lost your mind dealing with this man? You don't even know him.
I couldn't recall Orlando or ever mentioning Uncle Larry when we were together.
How do you know this not some type of trick, Vinny?
Trust me, it's not. They wouldn't destroy their entire transport operation just to set me up. He had a point, but there was something not right about this.
So, why would this man do this to his own family?
Vinny began to twirl his finger next to his ear.
Because he's crazy, honey. Like, for real, he's certifiable, straitjacket crazy. So crazy, the Duncans have a bounty on his head. And you want deal with this man?
I was getting a really bad feeling about this guy, Larry.
This is our one shot at taking out the Duncans once and for all, including Orlando. And isn't that what you wanted? To finally be rid of the man who killed your brother?
Yes, I said, although I felt my heart beat a little faster at the thought of Orlando actually being killed. Still, if that was what had to happen for me to get my life back, then so be it.
And that would mean you don't have to blow up our house and we can finally return to Negril, right?
Maybe. Vinny turned around and stared at the computer. Or maybe we'll go back to New York.
London, 24.
I'm gonna ask you this one more time. Where the fuck is Ruby?
Daryl yelled at the top of his lungs. The guy he directed the question to had been captured by Daryl's guys, who had been keeping an eye on the house Vinny and Ruby were allegedly staying at. I say allegedly because other than him, there had been no activity at the house in the past 48 hours. Rio and I had returned to the rental house to find this dude tied up in a chair in the middle of one of the empty bedrooms. Daryl and his guys took turns beating him in between questions.
"I don't know who you're talking about," the guy said, blood seeping from the corner of his mouth. "You don't, huh?"
Daryl gestured at one of his guys, who hit the dude so hard that a tooth came flying out of his mouth and skittered across the floor.
"Damn," Rio said, sounding disgusted. "Keep lying to me, and you're gonna be gumming your next fucking meal, if you live long enough to have one," Daryl threatened. "Now, tell me where Ruby and the boy are."
Daryl got no response, so I decided to take matters into my own hands. I walked over and took the gun out of Daryl's hand, then stood in front of the man. He looked at me, his eyes full of confusion and fear.
"Look, I'm tired, and I'm not gonna play games with you all night like these guys. As far as I'm concerned, my nephew's life is at stake here, so I'm gonna need for you to tell me where the fuck Ruby is."
My voice was calm, unlike everyone else who had dealt with him, which made him let down his guard a little. That was exactly what I wanted him to do. He looked me right in the eye and said,
"Fuck you, bitch."
I looked around at Daryl and his people. Everyone was staring at me, waiting to see what I would do.
"Fuck me, you say?" "Yeah, fuck you."
I lowered the gun slightly, and my eyes never left his as I pulled the trigger. I don't know what scared him more, the sound of the gunshot or the bullet that entered his foot. He screamed so loud I was worried someone in one of the neighboring beach houses would hear him.
"Damn," Rio said for the second time. "That shit hurt me. I know that shit had to hurt, didn't it?"
"Now tell me where Ruby and her son are." I aimed the gun at his other foot.
"You think I'm playing?"
The guy looked at me, panic-stricken, shaking his head.
"Okay, okay, they're in the house."
"What house?" Daryl's voice boomed over my shoulder.
"Vinny's house on the beach," he said. "They are upstairs, he and the boy. He makes them stay low so nobody can see him."
"Let's go." Daryl motioned for the two guys we had been working with, and they headed out the door.
"Wait," I snapped. "Where are you going?"
Daryl looked back at me.
"We're going to check it out. We've got his keys to get in, and I want to do it before they realize he's gone. You better pray we find them in that damn house. You've already lost a tooth and a foot. I'd hate to have you lose your life," Daryl warned the man.
"Be careful," I said to Daryl and his men as they left. The guy was groaning in pain. I looked down at his foot and stared at the blood as it oozed out of what used to be an Air Jordan sneaker. I didn't know why, but I had an uneasy feeling about Daryl and our men busting up in Vinny's house on the word of some idiot. It just didn't sit well with me. Daryl's logic was sound, but somehow it didn't feel right.
"London, something ain't right. This dude is lying about something."
I guess Rio was having the same thoughts as me. I looked over at the guy, who shifted his eyes away in a hurry, like he was afraid to make eye contact.
"Yeah, something wasn't right. Remember the last time when Sasha went into a house where we thought Vinny was hiding?" Rio continued. "He blew the bitch up and killed Ruby's brother and almost killed Sasha."
"Shit, you're right. I completely forgot about that." I glanced over at dude, and I swear I saw what looked like a grin come across his bloody face. There was no doubt in my mind now that something wasn't right. I aimed the gun at the guy's other foot.
"What the fuck did you do? You think this is a fucking joke?"
"Fuck you," he said, then spit at me. I clocked him upside the head with the gun. It didn't do much damage, but it felt good and got his attention. "Say goodbye to your other foot." I pointed the gun at his good foot, prepared to pull the trigger. but the bastard had the nerve to sit up like he was gonna take it. I guess he figured we were going to kill him anyway, so why the fuck should he talk? You know what, Rio? Fuck shooting his foot. I'm gonna shoot his dick off. You should have seen the guy stiffen up, and that damn smirk was gone, too. Oh, that sounds painful, Rio laughed, grabbing his groin. And by the way, who are you, and what did you do with my sister London? I locked her away until we go back home, but remember, what happens in Jamaica stays in Jamaica. No problem. I love this side of you. Me too. I moved the gun to dude's crotch, and his eyes went huge. You might want to turn your head. This is going to be messy. No, no, please don't. The guy was trembling and shifting in the chair. Then stop playing and tell us the truth, Rio chastised, getting in the guy's face. Fuck it, Rio. He ain't gonna talk. Vinny's been sucking his dick too long. But not anymore, Rio added in a sarcastic whine. The house is wired. Vinny is watching it from the surveillance cameras. He can see everything on the property. The dude spit out in a hurry. I was out the door and behind the wheel of the rental car before I heard him say anything else. The tires screeched as I pulled out of the driveway and took off down the street. I had only been a passenger in the car when Daryl and I went over to stake out the house a few days ago, so I had to rely on my vague memory to find my way back there. I navigated through the dark, unfamiliar streets, breaking all types of speed limits and driving laws. I could feel perspiration forming on my brow and between my breasts as I prayed out loud. God, please let me get to him. Please let me get to him. Finally, I arrived on the right street and saw the neon sign of the jerk chicken restaurant directly across from the house. As I got closer, I could see Daryl and the guy standing at the edge of the beachfront property. I laid on the horn, but he didn't look up as he stepped onto the walkway headed for the back entrance. I screamed, but they didn't hear me. If they got too much closer and the house blew up, they could be killed by flying debris. Fuck it. I slammed my foot on the accelerator and headed directly for the house, through the shrubs and onto the lawn. Daryl, no, no! I slammed my foot on the brakes 2 feet from the house and jumped out. I'd gotten his attention now, that was for sure. London, what the fuck? I heard him yell. Don't go in there! I screamed, running toward him. Daryl grabbed me and I pulled him back toward the street, screaming, The house is booby-trapped! Get away from the house! He ordered his men. When we were far enough away from the property, we stood under the neon lights of the restaurant sign, Daryl holding me tight. I was totally out of breath when our eyes met. I didn't think I was going to get here in time. Well, you did, and I'm grateful for it, he said, rubbing my back. So are you okay? Am I okay? I laughed, despite how my heart was racing. Tears filled my eyes, and I became overwhelmed with emotion. I can't believe I almost lost you. You'll never lose me. Daryl cupped my face in his hands. Then slowly, he kissed me.
Elsie, 25. My heart sank as we came around the bend of the road and what was left of Duncan's Transport Atlanta hub came into view. The entire complex looked like a roped-off war zone, with chunks of concrete, stone, and twisted metal scattered all over the place. 36 hours after it was bombed, there were still firemen putting out pockets of smoldering debris. And if that wasn't reminder enough of all that we had lost, there was still one wall and some trucks that remained to mock the fact that everything else was completely gone. "Pull over there," I instructed the driver, who did what he was told. He placed the car in park, and before he could get out, I had opened my own door and was halfway over to where Vegas was standing, surveying the damage. "What are you thinking?" I asked Vegas. "It's pretty much all gone." Vegas and I stared across the road at the dozen firemen and half-dozen cops going through the rubble. The building is totally demolished, along with 20 or so trucks. They've already pulled out 12 bodies, including Frankie B. I've got Harris over there dealing with the cops now. 12 dead? I repeated, slamming my fist into my palm. You know, Frankie B. was one of my best friends. Since you came back, he was planning on going down to Florida to retire. Yeah, I know. He was a good man, that Frankie. He taught me a lot. He's gonna be missed. Damn it, I should have seen this coming. Pop, no one could have predicted this. We all thought Uncle Larry was in New York. Why would he even come here? Vegas gritted his teeth in disbelief. Because this is where it all started. I knew my brother was on a path of destruction, but this told me he was only beginning. He's trying to send me a message.
And what's that?
Vegas asked. It took a moment for me to choke down the emotions that were welling up inside me. That he's going to destroy everything he, Lou, and I built. And he doesn't care who gets hurt in the process.
Yeah, but Pop, we don't even use this hub for that kind of stuff anymore. Frankie B. was running a legitimate business.
I know that, son. But Larry doesn't, or at least he doesn't care, I said. Just then, a car rolled up behind my SUV. You expecting someone? I asked Vegas. Before he could reply, Paris jumped out of the car and ran over to us. She hugged me tight.
Hey, Daddy, I missed you.
Missed you, too. I swear, despite her reckless foolishness, that girl always brought a smile to my face.
Did Uncle Larry and them do this?
Everything seems to point to it, I replied sadly.
Shit! What the hell did he use, an atom bomb?
Orlando asked as he walked up.
You find any clues to Kurt and Kenny's whereabouts?
Vegas asked his brother.
We ain't find no clues. We actually found Kurt and Kenny,
Paris exclaimed.
Get the fuck out of here,
Vegas said, a satisfied grin creeping up on his face.
Where do you have them stashed? I want to talk to those two.
We kind of had to let them go. You could hear the disappointment in Orlando's voice as Vegas's expression soured.
I told you we should have just snuck up on their asses and blasted them,
Paris snapped. She began pacing back and forth as she deflected all blame on her brother.
But no, O wanted to try and talk shit out.
She threw her hands in the air.
Yeah, well, he talked shit out so well Aunt Nene pulled a shotgun on us and let him go.
So you found him at the farm? I asked Orlando, knowing that Paris was too riled up to give me any useful information.
Yeah, but they didn't have any plans on staying there. They were digging for something,
Orlando said.
It was probably a body,
Vegas said. Nah, Larry would never bury a body on the farm. It was most likely money, I answered.
Money?
Vegas and Orlando asked at the same time. Yes, it's an old school thing. Guys like Larry never kept their money in banks. They'd hide it where they could get to it whenever they needed it. Larry's probably got money and gold stashed all over the place. I sighed. Did they find what they were looking for?
They left with a big army duffel bag, looked pretty full too.
Orlando answered.
What do you think they're going to do with all that money, Pop?
Vegas asked me. I don't know. But whatever it is, it's probably not going to be good for us, I told them. Vegas, make that 100 grand bounty on Larry's head a 500,000.
But what about Kurt and Kenny?
Vegas asked. Put 100 grand on each of them, too, I said coldly. Dead or alive.
Damn, Pop. You sure? I mean, those are our cousins.
Vegas seemed uncharacteristically hesitant. Yep, and Larry's my brother. But I refuse to allow him to go on a rampage across the country killing innocent people like he did last time. We've already got 12 dead, and that's not including Lee and his people. I turned and looked back at the crumbled transport center, becoming even more angry. The body count is getting too high. Those boys made their bed. Now they're gonna have to sleep in it.
Larry, 26. Once we arrived in Kingston, I got Mama settled into the hotel, then called Vinny Dash to arrange a meeting. Surprisingly, he was more than happy to meet with me. He even sounded excited about it. He offered to send a car over to get me and promised to buy me the biggest steak in Jamaica. Although, from the looks of the skinny-ass cows around here, I might order jerk chicken instead. I guess now that I'd taken care of our mutual pain-in-the-ass problem, Frankie B., Vinny's business would no doubt expand, and I was going to be his new best friend. Hell, I didn't have a problem with that. Me and him being friends would just piss Elsie and his brats off even more. The mutual hatred between the Duncans and the Dashes went way back, and from what I'd heard, it had only become more intense after Elsie orchestrated Vinny's father Sal being killed.
"You sure you don't want me to come with you?"
Mama asked as I was heading out the door. She hugged me like she had the day I went off to the Vietnam War. With Lou dead and Elsie's betrayal, it felt good to know someone cared for me that way. "I'm sure, Mama. You stay here and relax. Why don't you go down to the pool and see if you can get one of those Caribbean gigolos? I got this. I wasn't scared of Sal, so you know I'm not scared of his son. I was just joking about the gigolo thing, but I really did want Mama to relax."
"You've never been scared of anybody, but that don't change the fact that I got a bad feeling about this, son."
"Mama, you were the one who pushed me to set this meeting up. Now you're changing your mind?" I frowned.
"I ain't say shit about changing my mind or the deal," she snapped. "I just got a bad feeling about this, so much so I wish those hard-headed grandsons of mine were here."
She let me loose, wiping her glistening eyes.
"So? I'm just telling you to be careful with these people by yourself."
"Okay, Mama. I'll be careful." I kissed her cheek, picked up the package I'd brought with me from the States, and walked out the door. By the time I got downstairs and exited the courtyard, Kingston, the car Vinny had sent was waiting for me. The driver, a slim, older Jamaican, didn't say much while we were in the car, which was a good thing, because I wasn't the type for small talk anyway. Soon, he pulled up to a small cafe. I waited for him to open the door for me, and then I followed him inside. The smell of marijuana was so strong, I halfway expected to have a contact high by the time I was ready to leave.
"Holy shit! There he is! Larry fucking Duncan," I heard someone say from across the room.
I squinted in the dusty, dimly lit space and saw an olive-skinned man I assumed to be Vinny Dash sitting at one of the tables nearby.
"Man, I can't fucking believe this. You're a fucking legend,"
he said as I approached. "Yeah, but only in my mind," I said. Vinny stood up and stretched his hand out. We shook hands, then he motioned for me to sit in the chair beside him. "You look just like your daddy," I commented. Vinny nodded. "That's what everyone says, thanks." "That wasn't a damn compliment," I told him with a laugh.
"Damn, crazy Larry Duncan. I'm in awe right now."
Vinny took a long drag of the joint that had been laying in the ashtray in front of him. When he passed it to me, I declined. I didn't want to cloud my thinking.
"You really are a fucking legend, you know that? I mean, old man used to always say, LC is the smart one, Lou is the big dick one with all the women, but Crazy Larry, that's the one you want on your team. That guy is going to get the job done, no matter what. You did a lot of work for him back in the day, didn't you?"
"I completed a contract or two for him," I said nonchalantly.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And now look at this. I'm sitting here doing business with you. My dad would be proud, don't you think? Benny asked.
He would be if the deal is right, I told him. Sal Dash was a true businessman, very professional.
That he was, and I'm sure you'll find me to be just as professional. But I need to be assured of one thing. Are you sure Frankie B is dead?
Vinny's face had no expression as he stared directly in my eyes, making me laugh. A dark look passed over his face for a second.
What's so fucking funny? All I'm asking is if the guy's dead. I didn't ask for his head on a silver platter or anything.
That comment made me laugh even harder as I reached down to pick up the wrapped box I'd brought with me.
Hey, forget about that shit for a moment. I brought you a present.
I set it down in front of him.
Really? What the hell did you bring me?
Vinny seemed a little confused by me, and I liked it that way.
It's good to keep people guessing. Let them know they can never predict your next move. It gives you the upper hand.
Vinny opened the package, making sure not to rip the gold wrapping paper. He looked inside, then snapped his head back, trying unsuccessfully to hide the look of disgust on his face.
What the fuck is this?
That's Frankie's head, I said. I'm sorry, but I couldn't find a platter on such short notice. I had a flight to catch. Vinny managed to recover from his initial shock, and he laughed along with me.
This motherfucker really is crazy, he shouted,
raising the box for all to see.
He's got a fucking head in the box. You are one crazy son of a bitch.
The smile fell from my face. Not crazy. Eccentric. I hate the word crazy.
Okay, you're eccentric, motherfucker. Now that Frankie's gone and the Duncans are having some transportation issues they gotta deal with, I have a little present for you.
Vinny motioned toward one of his men and instructed him,
get one of those packages from the bar.
The guy walked behind the bar and returned with a package wrapped in brown paper.
You're looking for dope, so try this on for size.
Vinny tossed it over to me. I caught it, then took out a small knife from the pocket of my suit jacket, cut into the package, and licked the blade. That's good stuff, I told him.
Wow, now that's some old school shit. Most of the people I've ever dealt with have like a mini chemistry set, and if it don't turn blue, your shit ain't pure.
Well, I'm old school all the way. How much of the shit you got?
I got 500 key.
Vinny beamed with pride. You got 500 kilos? Of this?
Yep. I can sell it to you for 30 grand per key.
I grinned. No. You're gonna let me get it for 20 grand a key, okay?
What? Why the fuck would I sell it to you for that?
Vinny snapped.
Nobody else is going to sell it to you for 30. Wholesale is 35, and that's on a good day. I'm giving you a deal.
I shook my head. Come on, Vinny. We both know no one wants to buy from you at any price. Otherwise, this shit would be gone. Now, let's stop playing games and make a deal. He hesitated for a minute, but he couldn't deny the truth of what I was saying. Finally, he gave in a little.
I can't sell it to you for 20, but I'll split the difference with you and make it 25. What do you say?
You've got a deal. But I buy it in 4 shipments, 125 keys at a time. I reached my hand across to him, and he took it, sealing one hell of a good deal from me. Shit, if he had stuck to 30, I still would have bought the shit. Vinny picked up the blunt and took another long drag, then put it down and looked at me.
Well, I guess there's only one thing missing then.
What's that?
The money.
My boys will be here tomorrow. I'll have your money then. I told him as I stood up, offering my hand, which he took.
Larry, this is definitely the start of a beautiful friendship. Elsie is not going to know what hit him,
Vinny said with a chuckle.
If things worked out the way I planned,
This was just one of the many ways I'd be hitting my treacherous brother, L.C.
Sasha, 27. I was lying across the bed, watching some new Beyond